Dan Dillman here, bringing you a little of this, a little of that. You know, it's really good to be back. It's been about 3 weeks since I talked to you the last time. So today, the information and the entertainment is really piled up. Our schedule for today is apropos, it's voting. And so I'm going to lead off with polling. And then I'm going to tell you about some Major League Baseball rule changes. And we'll see what happens after that. So we can really call this part A. We're so happy that you tuned in to 101.5 on your FM dial. We really enjoy your company. And if you're looking for entertainment and information and maybe an amusing smile or two, this is the place. So let's kick it off right away. My question is accurate polling becoming harder to do? Polls received a lot of criticism after the 2020 U.S. general election. Polls said that Joe Biden would win, and he did, but not as large a margin or in as many states as polls led people to expect. The polling profession is making progress in understanding what went wrong in 2020, but the obstacles facing polling have been growing steadily over the past few decades. And election polls, one especially high-profile type of poll, face unique challenges, including having to predict who is actually going to vote. These obstacles have required pollsters of all kinds to adjust their methods and to devote considerably more effort to obtain accurate results. Much of what I'm saying and will say for the next 5 or 10 minutes is from the Pew Research Center. This is a center which is not politically affiliated one way or the other, but is interested in accurate polling and accurate information. It's getting harder to reach people and to persuade them to participate in a poll. Excuse me. The biggest obstacle surveys face today is that it has gotten much harder to reach people and to persuade them to consent to an interview. This is mostly a consequence of lifestyle changes. People seem to have busier lives, coupled with a growing wariness about cooperating with requests for information from a person or an organization that they're not familiar with. In part because of the decline of responses to telephone surveys. The Pew Research Center decided a few years back to stop relying primarily on telephone surveys and instead to switch to using rigorous online surveys. While telephone surveys can still provide accurate data, online surveys provide some advantages that make them an attractive alternative. Research has shown, for example, that the quality of answers that people give in self-administered surveys is often higher than in surveys with an interviewer. And not needing interviewers means online, surveys are usually less expensive than telephone surveys, sometimes significantly so. Well, some people are more likely than others to take polls. Another challenge for pollsters, especially election pollsters, is that people with higher levels of education tend to be more willing to participate in surveys, resulting in samples that overrepresent those with college degrees. The same is true for people with higher incomes. Perhaps not surprisingly, people who are engaged with politics and public affairs are also more willing to take polls that deal with these subjects. Well, fortunately, data from the US Census can serve as a benchmark to ensure that survey samples match the total US population on characteristics like education and age and voter registration. And using this information, we're able to give a greater weight to underrepresented groups in the sample so that their voice matches their share in the population. But other problems can't be fixed by consulting census data. In 2020, for example, there was a general tendency for Biden supporters to be more likely than Trump supporters to cooperate with polling requests. According to a review of 2020 election polls by the American Association for Public Opinion Research, the major professional association of US pollsters, this was the pattern that was quite evident. If that turns out to be the reason for the polling misses, it's a highly unusual situation. Election polling in the US and around the world has been quite accurate for decades because supporters of different parties, different candidates, have seemed equally willing or unwilling to participate. But right now, we cannot know whether this is a short-term issue or something polls will have to deal with going forward. Well, for election surveys, who will actually vote? Election polls also bear an extra burden that most other polls do not. They have to anticipate who among those interviewed will actually vote. Even with a voter turnout in 2020 that eclipsed 100-year records, fully a third of US eligible adult population did not cast a ballot. Not everyone who says in a poll that they intend to vote actually does so. And election polls have to estimate who will and who won't. That may be a particularly difficult job in a high turnout election, when people who haven't voted in the recent past suddenly show up, and this confounds pollster estimates. So can we still trust polls? It's important to put the 2020 performance of the election polls into perspective. The errors were consequential, to be sure, and very sizable compared with most election polls. But they were not particularly large in absolute terms, just a few percentage points on average on each candidate's support. Of course, in the context of a close election, such errors mean the difference between a good and a bad forecast. It's also crucial to understand that most polls are not about elections. Instead, they aim to capture the views that people hold on key issues of the day, which may be different as time goes by. The realities of their lives they're interested in, such as their employment, lifestyle activities, healthcare, or where they get their information, and other subjects. This kind of polling is important because it provides an independent source of information about what Americans experience and what they believe, without which we'd be left with what pundits, parties, and public officials claim the public is thinking. Well, fortunately, the news is better when it comes to this type of issue polling. We have a lot of evidence that polls that are weighted to match the population on important demographic categories do a good job. And even when it comes to issue polling, errors in accurately representing the share of Biden or Trump voters make very little difference in the results. For example, small errors in candidate support are less meaningful when trying to understand how people feel about issues like abortion, the budget deficit, foreign aid, climate change, and other things. And just because someone supports a certain candidate does not necessarily mean that they agree with their preferred candidate on every issue. So in sum, pollsters recognize the challenges that they are facing and are working hard to ensure that their work continues to accurately represent the views of the public. One way this is happening is through a proliferation of different ways of doing polls, some of which may be less reliable than others. Experimentation is a good thing. It makes the job of a poll consumer, that's us, much harder. Our last lesson and next lesson will come later on after we hear about the results of the current election as people go to the polls today. And with that, we'll take a short break and be back to tell you about some changes in Major League Baseball next year. when you go to the ball games next year, you're going to see some changes that are unlike any to date. Major League Baseball has announced three rule changes that have been approved by a majority vote of the new competition committee for play during the 2020 championship season. That includes spring training and even the postseason. The new joint committee was created as a part of the collective bargaining agreement, which was negotiated between Major League Baseball and the MLB Players Association earlier this year. Some of the changes we'll talk about today, and some at a later date. So the first thing I wanted to tell you was about the pitch timer. A pitch timer will improve the pace of play and reduce dead time. The minor leagues used 14 seconds with the bases empty and 18 seconds in the triple A level, actually 19 seconds there and 18 seconds at the lower, next lower league, with at least one runner on base. Another change is that the pitcher may disengage the rubber and the timer resets. And the pitcher can disengage from the rubber twice per plate appearance without a penalty. If he does this more than that, it's a balk, unless an out is recorded on the runner or a runner. The disengagement count resets if the runner advances. His testing in the minors had no reset until the following plate appearance. What about hitting? A hitter must be in the batter's box and alert to the pitcher with at least 8 seconds remaining. Testing in the minor leagues included 9 seconds remaining. A hitter will receive one timeout per plate appearance. So none of this timeout to fix your gloves and to do other things, which do nothing but slow the game. And umpires will have authority to provide additional time if warranted by special circumstances. For example, the catcher makes the last out of the inning and has to go back to the dugout, and he does need additional time to get into a defensive position. Compared to last season, the pitch timer will reduce the average 9-inning game by 26 minutes while increasing action on the field. Stolen base attempts per game have increased at a rate of 68% success rate. And it's expected they will reach 77. In its most recent week of play, minor league baseball has averaged just 0.45 pitch timer violations per game. So you see, they're going to be on the clock next year, and next time I'm with you, I'll tell you about the larger bases that will be used. and the lateral positioning that will be allowed. There's going to be a big change in the positioning of players in shifts according to the, where the batter is supposed to hit. That is, like, where the batter is likely to hit, into right field, into left field, and so forth. And with that, we're going to pause with just a moment or two of music for you to listen to, and I'll be back with some information about long COVID. Just recently, I was reading the current issue of Consumer Reports, and in it, there is an extremely informative article about COVID, but in particular, long COVID. The part of the article entitled "A Wide Variety of Symptoms," I think, would be most useful for us today. And so I'm going to try to cover that before we end. People with long COVID have cataloged dozens of associated symptoms, but a few of them stand out. Those include fatigue and breathing discomfort, as well as cognitive dysfunction, such as brain fog, which is characterized by problem with memory, finding words, and the ability to focus. Other reported symptoms include stomach and other issues, such as heartburn, constipation and diarrhea, dizziness and rapid heart rate, problem sleeping, and persistent loss of smell, though it appears less common in patients infected with the Omicron variant of the disease. The severity of symptoms also varies widely. For some, fatigue might prevent a regular runner from getting back to their routine. For others, it can be so intense that they cannot get out of bed. Researchers are still trying to figure out the biological mechanisms behind these symptoms. Some think that SARS-CoV-2 could leave behind viral particles or even a hidden ongoing infection in the gut. Others think that tiny blood clots or damage to small blood vessels could play a role, affecting blood flow to the brain and other vital organs. The virus could also trigger an autoimmune reaction where the body creates antibodies that attack healthy cells. And that is a very quick summary of how long COVID affects us. And now it's time for me to think about getting ready to go down the road again, looking for more items to fill up. Next week's program, and Willie Nelson and I, as usual, we go down the road according to his On the Road Again tune, hoping that you will tune in to a little of this, a little of that, for some information, some entertainment, and a smile or two. And for that, my friends, keep safe, be well, and we'll talk to you in a very short time. Bye-bye.